Hi, this is Mrs. English, and this session I will be reading from Richmond Lattimore's translation of Homer's Iliad, Book 5. In this book, we'll see the Aristeia of Diomedes. Look this up in your glossary, Aristeia, A-R-I-S-T-E-I-A. The Aristeia of Diomedes. This is the day that Diomedes will shine. He'll have the gods behind him. He will look very, very good today. There to Tydeus' son Diomedes, Pallas Athena granted strength and daring. Strength and daring, this is the menace, it's a force of rushing energy, that he might be conspicuous among all the Argives, the Greeks, and win the glory of valor. The glory of valor, this is the kleos of arete, the glory of excellence. She made Wirilus fire blaze from his shield and helmet, like that star of the waning summer, who beyond all stars rises bathed in the ocean stream to glitter in brilliance. Remember, this ocean stream referred to is the flat disk of Homer's world. The stars rise from the ocean, and they set in the ocean. Line 7. Such was the fire she made blaze from his head and his shoulders, and urged him into the middle fighting where most were struggling. All right, so he's glowing as he goes into battle. Line 9. There was a man of the Trojans, Dares, blameless and bountiful, priest consecrated to Hephaestus, and he had two sons, Phegeus and Iados, well skilled both in all fighting. These two, breaking from the ranks of the others, charged against him, riding their chariot as Diomedes came on, dismounted. And now, as in their advance these had come close to each other, line 15, first of the two, Phegeus let go his spear, far shadowing, over the left shoulder of Tydeus' son, past the pointed spear, nor struck his body, and Diomedes thereafter threw with the bronze, and the weapon cast from his hand flew not vain, but struck the chest between the nipples, and hurled him from behind his horses. That was line 20. Did you notice in these lines how they fight? Read those lines again. They're mounted on chariots. And what happens, line 13, as Diomedes came on, dismounted, they stop their chariot, they get off, then they throw their spears, and then they get back on the chariot to go away. Apparently, Homer is talking about chariots in battle, and yet he has no idea how you would fight from a chariot, because of course you would keep moving. Line 20. And Idias, leaping left the fair-wrought chariot, nor had he the courage to stand over his stricken brother. Even so, he could not have escaped the black death spirit. But Hephaestus caught him away and rescued him, shrouded in darkness, that the aged man might not be left altogether desolate. So Hephaestus saved one of these sons so that their father would still have one. Line 25. But the son of high-hearted Tydeus drove off the horses and gave them to his company to lead back to the hollow vessels. Now he doesn't even need his chariot. Now as the high-hearted Trojans watched the two sons of Dares, one running away and one cut down by the side of his chariot, the anger in all of them was stirred. But gray-eyed Athena took violent Ares by the hand, and in words she spoke to him. Ares, Ares, man-slaughtering, blood-stained, stormer of strong walls, shall we not leave the Trojans and Achaeans to struggle after whatever way Zeus' father grants glory to either? So Athena says, let them fight their own fight, while we two give ground together and avoid Zeus's anger? Line 35. So she spoke, and led violent Ares out of the fighting, and afterwards caused him to sit down by the sands of Scamandrus, while the Danaans bent the Trojans back, and each of the princes killed his man. And first, the lord of men, Agamemnon, hurled tall Odius, lord of the Halizones, from his chariot, for, in his back, line 40, even as he was turning the spear fixed between the shoulders and was driven on through the chest beyond it, he fell thunderously, and his armor clattered upon him. Idomeneus killed Phaestus, the son of Maeonian Borus, who had come out of tarn with the deep soil. Idomeneus, the spear-renowned, stabbed this man just as he was mounting behind his horses, with the long spear driven in the right shoulder. He dropped from the chariot, and the hateful darkness took hold of him. The henchmen of Idomeneus stripped the armor from Phaestus, while Menelaus, son of Atreus, killed with the sharp spear Strophius's son, a man of wisdom in the chase, Scamandrius, line 50, the fine huntsman of beasts, Artemis herself, what kind of hunter was he? A good one, if Artemis taught him. Artemis herself had taught him to strike down every wild thing that grows in the mountain forest. Yet Artemis of the showering arrows could not help him now. No, nor the long spear casts, in which he had been preeminent. But Menelaus the spear-famed, son of Atreus, stabbed him as he fled away before him, in the back, with a spear thrust between the shoulders and driven through to the chest beyond it. He dropped forward on his face, and his armor clattered upon him. Meriones, in turn, killed Phereclus, son of Harmonides, the smith, who understood how to make with his hand all intricate things, since above all others Polyathena had loved him. He it was who had built for Alexandrus the balanced ships, the beginning of the evil, fatal to the other Trojans, and to him, since he knew nothing of the gods' plans. Line 65. This man Meriones pursued, and overtaking him, struck in the right buttock, and the spearhead drove straight on, and passing under the bone went into the bladder. He dropped, screaming, to his knees, and death was a mist about him. Meges, in turn, killed Pedaeus, the son of Antenor, line 70, who, bastard though he was nursed by lovely Theano, with close care, as for her own children, to pleasure her husband. Now the son of Phileus, the spear-famed, closing upon him, struck him with the sharp spear behind the head at the tendon, and straight on through the teeth and under the tongue cut the bronze blade, line 75, and he dropped in the dust, gripping in his teeth the cold bronze. Eurypylus, Eumaeon's son, killed brilliant Hypsenor, son of high-hearted Dolopion, he who was made Scamandrus's priest and was honored about the countryside as a god is. This man, Eurypylus, the shining son of Eumaeon, line 80, running in chase as he fled before him, struck in the shoulder with a blow swept from the sword and cut the arm's weight from him, so that the arm dropped bleeding to the ground, and the red death and destiny, the powerful, took hold of both eyes. So they went at their work, all the strong encounter. But you could not have told on which side Tydeus's son was fighting, whether he were one with the Trojans or with the Achaeans, the Greeks, since he went storming up the plain, here's a Homeric simile, like a winter-swollen river in spate that scatters the dikes in its running current, one that the strong compacted dikes can contain no longer, neither the mounded banks of the blossoming vineyards hold it, rising suddenly as Zeus's rain makes heavy the water, and many lovely works the young men crumble beneath it. All right, what was it like as Tydeus fought? It was just like when a dike can no longer hold back the water. Line 9-3. Like these, the massed battalions of the Trojans were scattered by Tydeus's son, and many as they were could not stand against him. Now, as the shining son of Lycaon, Pandarus, watched him, storming up the plain, scattering the battalions before him, at once he strained the bent bow against the son of Tydeus, and shot, and hit him as he charged forward, in the right shoulder at the hollow of the corselet, and the bitter arrow went straight through, holding clean to its way, and a corselet was all blood spattered. This Pandarus is one to keep an eye on. Shakespeare in 1600 will pick up the story of Pandarus and use him. That was line 100. And the shining son of Lycaon cried aloud in a great voice, "Rise up, Trojans, O high-hearted lashers of horses! Now the best of the Achaeans is hit, and I think that he will not long hold up under the strong arrow, if truly Apollo, lord and son of Zeus, stirred me to come forth from Lycia." Line 105. So he spoke, vaunting, but the swift arrow had not broken him. Only he drew back again to his chariot and horses, and stood there, speaking to Sthenelus, son of Capaneus. Come, dear friend, son of Capaneus, step down from the chariot, so that you may pull out from my shoulder this bitter arrow. Now, to begin with, what did Pandarus fight with? Close combat? With some type of a sword or a spear? No, with an arrow, which is the way cowards fight, according to Homer. And is Diomedes ruined? No, he just needs somebody to come pull it out of his shoulder. That was line 110. So he spoke, and Sthenelus sprang to the ground from his chariot, and standing beside him, pulled the sharp arrow clean through his shoulder, and the blood shot up spurting through the delicate tunic. Now Diomedes of the great war cry spoke aloud, praying, "Hear me now, Atreatone." And of course, who is this? This is Athena, daughter of Zeus of the Aegis. If ever before in kindliness you stood by my father through the terror of fighting, be my friend now also, Athena. Grant me that I may kill this man, and come within spear cast, who shot me before I could see him, and now boasts over me, saying I cannot live to look much longer on the shining sunlight. Line 120. So Diomede tells us, let me kill him. I didn't get a chance to see him, because of course he shoots with arrows, the coward. Line 121. So he spoke in prayer, and Pallas Athena heard him. She made his limbs light again, and his feet, and his hands above them, and standing close beside him, she spoke and addressed him in winged words. Be of good courage now, Diomedes, to fight with the Trojans, since I have put inside your chest the strength of your father untremulous, such as the horseman Tydeus of the great shield had. I have taken away the mist from your eyes that before now was there, so that you may well recognize the god and the mortal. What power did Athena just give to Diomedes? She took the mist from his eyes so that now he will recognize the gods and mortals, because the gods are out there also. He will be able to tell if it's a god or a mortal. Therefore now, if a god making trial of you comes hither, do you not do battle head on with the gods immortal? Line 130. Okay, if you see a god coming at you, don't try and fight with them. Not with the rest, but only if Aphrodite, Zeus's daughter, comes to the fighting. Her, at least, you may stab with the sharp bronze. So Athena advises Diomedes, I'm going to let you know if it's a god. Don't fight against the gods, unless, of course, it's Aphrodite. If it's Aphrodite, go ahead and stab it with your sharp bronze. She spoke thus, gray-eyed Athena, and went, while Tydeus' son closed once again with the champions, taking his place there, raging as he had been before to fight with the Trojans. Line 135. Now the strong rage tripled, took hold of him, as of a lion whom the shepherd among his fleecy flocks in the wild lands grazed as he leapt the fence of the fold, but has not killed him, but only stirred up the lion's strength, and can no more fight him off, but hides in the steading, and the frightened sheep are forsaken, and these are piled pell-mell on each other in heaps, while the lion, raging, still leaps out again over the fence of the deep yard. That's what it was like. Such was the rage of strong Diomedes as he closed with the Trojans. Next he killed Astyanax and Hyperion, shepherd of the people, striking one with the bronze-heeled spear above the nipple, and cutting the other beside the shoulder through the collarbone with the great sword, so that neck and back were hewn free of the shoulder. He left these men and went on after Pelides and Abas, sons of the aged dream interpreter Eurydamas. What is Eurydamas' occupation? He's a dream interpreter. Line 150. Yet for these two, as they went forth, the old man did not answer their dreams, but Diomedes the powerful slew them. Now he went after the two sons of Phaenops, Xanthus and Theuon, both full grown. But Phaenops was stricken in sorrowful old age, nor could breed another son to leave among his possessions. There he killed these two, line 155, and took away the dear life from them both, leaving to their father lamentation and sorrowful affliction, since he was not to welcome them home from the fighting alive still, and remoter kinsmen shared his possessions. So when he dies, remoter kinsmen will inherit, is what that line tells us, not his own sons. Line 159. Next he killed two children of Dardanian Priam, who were in a single chariot, Echemon and Chromius. As among cattle a lion leaps on the neck of an ox or heifer that grazes among the wooded places and breaks it, so the son of Tydeus, hurled both from their horses hatefully, in spite of their struggles, then stripped their armor and gave the horses to his company to drive to their vessels. 9165. And so now he's just killed 2 of the 50 sons of Priam. Now, as Aeneas, and of course, it line 166 here in Book 5, this is Aeneas, this is the story, this is the man that Virgil in 19 BC will pick up on and use for the Romans. Now, as Aeneas saw him wrecking the ranks of warriors, he went on his way through the fighting and the spears' confusion, looking to see if he could find Pandarus, the godlike, and he came upon the strong and blameless son of Lycaon. He stood before him face to face and spoke a word to him. Pandarus, where now are your bow and your feathered arrows? Where your fame, in which no man here dare contend with you, nor can any man in Lycia claim he is better? Come then, hold up your hands to Zeus, and let go an arrow at this strong man, whoever he be, who does so much evil to the Trojans, since many and great are those whose knees he's broken, unless this be some god who in wrath with the Trojans for offerings failed afflicts them. The wrath of a god is hard to deal with. All right, Aeneas here just told Pandarus, ask Zeus to help you shoot an arrow and kill this guy. Look at how many people he's broken their knees. Unless he's really a god, unless this Diomedes is really a god who is angry with the Trojans. Look at line 177. For offerings fail unless there is some god we have offended because we have not offered enough. And that line, the wrath of a god is hard to deal with, tells us quite a bit about the Greek pantheon of gods. Line 179. Then in answer, the shining son of Lycaon, that's Pandarus, spoke to him. Aeneas, charged with the counsels of the bronze-armored Trojans, I liken him in all ways to the valiant son of Tydeus, going by his shield and the hollow eyes of his helmet and by the look of his horses. Hey, I think it's Diomedes. I can tell by his shield and the hollow eyes of his helmet and his horses. But it may be a god, I'm not sure. And if this is a man, as I think, and the valiant son of Tydeus, yet not without god does he rage so. But some one of the immortals, one of the gods, mantling in mist his shoulders, stands close beside him, who turning my flying arrow as it struck elsewhere away from him. All right, if Pandarus shoots an arrow at Diomedes and it does not hit him, is it because Pandarus is a bad shot? No, it's because a god threw a mantle of mist over Diomedes' shoulders, stood close beside him, and made the arrow strike elsewhere. For I have shot my shaft already and hit him in the shoulder, the right one, hard driven through the hollow of his corslet. And I said to myself, I had hurled him down to meet Idomeneus. This is Hades. Idomeneus? Hades? Idomeneus. Yet still I have not beaten him. Now this is some god who is angered. But I have no horses nor chariot. Oh, rats, I left my chariots at home. I can't fight close up like you do. But I have no horses nor chariot I could mount in. And yet somewhere in the great house of Lycaon are 11 chariots. Beauties all new made, just finished, and over them blankets lie spread, and beside each chariot one brace of horses stand there, champing their white barley and oats. Oh, if only I'd remember to bring a chariot. But Lycaon, the aged spearman, spoke to me over and over as I was on my way from the house, well compacted, advising me. He told me to take my horses and chariots, and riding there to be lord among the Trojans in the strong encounters, line 200. I did not let him persuade me, and that would have been far better, sparing my horses, who had grown accustomed to eating all they wished, from going hungry where the men were penned in a small place. So I left them and made my way on foot to Ilium, trusting my bow, a thing that was to profit me nothing. For now I have drawn it against 2 of their best men, Tydeus's son, Diomedes, and the son of Atreus, this is Menelaus earlier, remember? And both of these I hit and drew visible blood, yet only wakened their anger. So it was in bad luck that I took from its peg the curved bow on that day when I carried it to lovely Ilion. Line 210. At the head of my Trojans, bringing delight to brilliant Hector. And now if ever I win home again and lay eyes once more on my country and my wife and the great house with the high roof, let some stranger straightway cut my head from my shoulders if I do not break this bow in my hands and throw it in the shining fire, since as a wind and nothing I've taken it with me. Okay? cut off my head from my shoulders if I don't break my bow first thing when I get home and throw it in the fire since it's been useless to me. Line 217. Then in turn, Aeneas, lord of the Trojans, answered him. So this is Aeneas speaking to Pandarus. Speak no more this way. There will be no time for changing before you and I must face this man with horses and chariot, and strength against strength. Fight it out with our weapons. Therefore, mount rather into my chariot, so that you may see what the Trojan horses are like, how they understand their plain, and how to traverse it in rapid pursuit and withdrawal. These two will bring us safe to the city again, if once more Zeus grants glory to Diomedes, the son of Tydeus. All right, so what does Aeneas say? All right, you didn't bring your own chariot. Why don't you get up on my chariot? You can see how they fight. Okay, see what the horses are like. You can get up close. Line 226. Come then, taking into your hands the goad and the glittering reins, while I dismount from my chariot and carry the fighting, or else yourself encounter this man while I handle the horses. So the understanding is that while fighting from a chariot, one drives, you stop, the other gets off, and the one handles the horses, the other gets off and fights for a while. They take turns, so he says, take your pick. Then in answer, the shining son of Lycaon, this is Pandarus, spoke to him, keep yourself, Aeneas, the reins and your horses. These will carry better the curved chariot under the driver they know best, if we must give way before the son of Tydeus. Okay, you drive because the horses are used to you. For fear they might go wild with terror and not be willing to carry us out of the fighting, as they listen and long for your voice. Line 235. For fear the son of high-hearted Tydeus, this Diomedes, charging upon us, might kill us both and drive away the single-footed horses. Rather, drive yourself, your own horses, and your own chariot, while with my sharp spear I encounter this man as he comes on. They spoke so, and mounting the wrought chariot, held their fast-running horses against the son of Tydeus in fury. And Sthenelus, the shining son of Capaneus, seeing them, swiftly uttered his winged words to the son of Tydeus, Diomedes. Son of Tydeus, you who delight my heart, Diomedes, look, I see two mighty men furious to fight with you. Line 245. Their strength is enormous, one of them well skilled in the bow's work, Pandarus, who claims his right as son of Lycaon, and the other, Aeneas, who claims he was born as son to Anchises the Blameless, but his mother was Aphrodite. All right, this is a demigod. His father's Anchises and his mother was Aphrodite, and Anchises is the cousin to Priam. And so Aeneas is kind of like a